From WKAR Studios at Michigan State University, welcome back to the second half hour of Current State. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick, catching you up on what's happening around the Capital Region and the Great Lakes. Lansing's new medical marijuana ordinance takes effect this weekend. As we've reported, the ordinance places a cap on medical marijuana provision centers and dispensaries at 25. Applications for licenses to operate medical marijuana businesses are now available. WKAR Morning Edition host Brooke Allen talked with Lansing City Clerk Chris Swope about the many steps and costs associated with applying for a license.
Thank you for joining us. So this has been an 18-month process getting to this point. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The City Council has been working on the ordinance and various versions of the ordinance for quite a long time. The Public Safety Committee worked on it for over a year and a half. They reported a version out, which then the Committee on Development and Planning within the City Council wanted to take a look at it. So they kind of grabbed it. Came up with another version. Then there was kind of a merge of those two versions, and then the whole Committee of the Whole, which is made up of all eight council members, kind of took the whole thing. So it's been through three city council committees. There have been, negotiations between individual council members and various revisions, and the final version of it didn't actually get completely drafted until the night that it was actually adopted on September 7th. So, it's had several members of the city attorney's staff working on it, the mayor had input. It's been a very complex process.
And it's been in the headlines a lot.
It has been in the headlines a lot. It's a big, important issue, from both sides. People who are supportive of medical marijuana definitely want to make sure that there's room for the industry to grow and thrive. Business factors are on both sides that want to make sure that we have a thriving industry, but they also want to make sure that it is not negatively impacting other businesses. And then we have neighborhood people and groups who want to make sure that it's not negatively impacting their neighborhood or some of our business corridors through the city of Lansing. So it's a lot of different competing interests and overlapping interests to take into consideration.
There are five different types of licenses available: provisioning center, safety compliance facility, processor facility, secure transporter, and grower facility. We're going to talk about those in just a few minutes, but we've only got about 7 seconds, but you said there is a $5,000 fee.
That's right. They have to pay that when they apply, and we expect a lot of them to be using cash for that, unfortunately.
We are talking with Lansing City Clerk Chris Swope. Lansing's new medical marijuana ordinance takes effect this Saturday, and as we've reported, the ordinance places a cap on medical marijuana provision centers and dispensaries at 25, and there are five different types of licenses available. So will you go over those for
us? Sure. So there are five different kinds of licenses. We have the provisioning center, also known as dispensary, the safety compliance facility, processor facility, a secure transporter, and a grower facility. Now, we will have applications available for those beginning tomorrow, and Monday we will begin accepting all of them except for the provisioning center. The other four license types, there is no cap set in the ordinance, so we will not be having a specific opening and ending period for those applications. We will be getting those since the ordinance will be effective when we're back open for business on Monday. The ordinance, though, for the provisioning center, since there is that cap of 25.
And again, that's the dispensary.
That's the dispensary that is the provisioning center,
okay.
Yes. That cap of 25, the ordinance is letting me set a 30-day window when we will accept those, and I have not set that 30-day window yet. So if you're working with a provisioning center, keep your eyes open. We will be announcing that in the next week or two, but we're not quite ready to set that 30-day period yet.
Okay.
Once we do start accepting those, I want to emphasize those will not be first come, first serve. There's a specific grading, scoring criteria set out in the ordinance. So it's based on the quality of your business plan, the number of jobs created, positive and negative impacts on the surrounding community, positive and negative impacts on crime in the area. So it's going to be a complex scoring process once we get to accepting those. And again, it's not going to be first come, first serve. We will be going through each application, scoring it, and it's going to be the top score. So I just really want to emphasize that when we do get to that 30-day window, I want the provisioning centers, dispensaries to be aware.
Okay, so once that 30-day window closes, mm-hmm. how long do you think that process is going to take to review?
Well, you know, it's a little bit hard to figure out. You know, we do have some specific pass-fail measures in terms of whether they meet the zoning and various other things. So it's possible that some of the denials could come rather quickly. Mm-hmm. But then we have to score the business plan. We're still working to get an expert to help us with that project. And we have to score the various parts on a 100-point scale. And then we have to basically have them all scored before we can pick the top. And initially, it's only 20. In the first round, there's only 20 that get a license. And then I have to set another open period for the five final licenses to be issued. So, you know, we have to get through that scoring. And, you know, one of the provisions is that they can't be within 500 feet of another provisioning center. So that adds a level of complexity because if you have two high scoring that are near to each other,
right.
You know, we have to shake that all out.
Wow. Okay. So it was 18 months getting to this point. So now it's going to be a little bit of a process.
It will be a process. And, you know, the state, because all five of these also require that they have a state license. So they need our conditional license really to apply with the state. Our goal is that close to the December 15th period when the state starts accepting them, our goal is to have most of those that are going to get one of our conditional licenses to know so that they can start that state process. Because the state process will actually probably take several months in terms of their approval.
Okay, so there are five different types of licenses available. The question, can an individual or company apply for more than one license?
They can, yes. Yeah, they absolutely can. There is some restriction in terms of the testing facility can't be involved in another type of license, and that's, you know, to make sure that they aren't inappropriately testing their own product. So there are some limitations, but a growing facility can definitely also separately operate a provisioning center. So yes, there can be. And, you know, when you look at jobs created, if you're a provisioning center that's attached, that also owns a grow operation, and that's part of your business plan, you know, that impacts the number of jobs that you're creating
right.
in the community.
Right. So it kind of goes hand in hand almost.
Right. Right.
Okay. So, how does somebody submit an application? I mean, there's a lot involved here.
There is a lot involved. We have about a 5-page application,
okay.
but one page of it is just a checklist of about 23 other things that you have to have attached to it. So you have to have the business plan. You have to have a security plan. You have to have a patient education plan. You have to have all these things attached when you apply. So we aren't going to let someone come in with a partial application and turn it in and come back in a week with the rest of it.
You can't do it piecemeal. You have to have everything intact.
You need to have everything there along with the $5,000 fee. You know, we're gonna take a few minutes and we're gonna check and make sure that that you at least have something representing each of the things that are required, which includes insurance either a bond or escrow account. So
are referrals in the application? I'm just curious. Like, do you need somebody to vouch for you in the application?
No, but part of the business plan does need resumes of the stakeholders. So mm-hmm. Some looking at the fact of whether or not they have business experience and experience in this field.
Okay. So if people have questions, and I assume there will be many, where should they go?
Well, right now we've set up a webpage. You can get to it. There's a link from lansingmi.gov/clerk. Right on the front page, there's a link to our medical marijuana page. We have also set up a list for those people who want to receive updates as they come, so they can call my office, 483-4133, and ask to be added to the update list. And whenever we have news on medical marijuana, we will be sending an email out.
That was Chris Swope, Lansing City Clerk. Again, thank you, Chris, for coming in.
Thank you, Brooke. There's an outcast in everybody's life, and I am her. There's a shadow in everybody's front door, and I am her. I am her. There's a dark cloud in everybody's sunlight, and I am her. I am her. Oh, no, I am her.
Williamston Public Schools are now trying to create guidelines for transgender students, after hearing an earful from parents, students, and other community members last week. One policy change would allow students to use the restroom of the gender they identify with. Williamston is also trying to figure out how to prevent bullying of transgender or non-conforming students. WKAR's Katie Cook attended last Monday's meeting, which included dozens of speakers on all sides.
The Williamston Middle School gym was packed with close to 200 people for Monday night's school board meeting. 73 people gave public comment on the policy. Many parents, like Scott Lucas, took issue with the part of the policy that says school staff shouldn't disclose information that reveals a transgender or non-conforming student's identity to others, including the student's parents.
But to take the parents out of the equation just because some parents might not be able to deal with the issue is ludicrous to me.
Some parents spoke in favor of the policy, and some of those parents have transgender children. A few transgender people spoke as well, like Ava, a former Williamston student. She talked about the anxiety she feels whenever she uses a public restroom.
I try and get in and out as quickly as possible so that I don't have to deal with someone.
Greg Talberg is the school board president. He says that even though some who commented said no policy is needed, he believes the school board can find a way to write a policy that will work.
I don't think that not doing an adequate job with existing bullying should prevent us from trying to stop bullying against transgender students. I heard what the community said. I just don't think the two things are mutually exclusive. I think we should do both better.
Talberg says the next step is for the policy committee to meet to look at the public's concerns and work to come to a consensus. For WKAR News, I'm Katie Cook. These days the world is full of aliens. The world is full of aliens, but you are real life human.
The Great Lakes region provides recreational opportunities all year, whether it's hiking in the fall, ice fishing in the winter, or boating in the spring and summer. But not everyone is able to access the waters in the same way. Now, people with disabilities are getting more options. Veronica Volk with our reporting partners Great Lakes Today explains.
Julie Cataldo is strapped into a harness as she sits in her wheelchair just a few feet from the edge of the Erie Canal. A hydraulic lift hoists her from her chair and swings her out over the water. The lift lowers her into a kayak, and its operator adjusts her seat. This is Cataldo's second time in a single kayak, and in a few minutes, she's cruising alone down the canal near Rochester, New York.
I'm never going to be an expert kayaker, but I can at least make the kayak go.
Cataldo found out about adaptive kayaking at the Erie Canal Boat Company a few years ago. She has cerebral palsy, a neurological disorder that affects her mobility. But because of the lift, she can get into the kayak. And because of the kayak's special seat and a few safety features, she's properly supported.
Oh, it's nice to have other options and just to get outdoors. And I mean, I go outside when I'm home, but I don't really zoom around the neighborhood. I don't find that fun.
A decade ago, you wouldn't have found accessible kayaks in the Erie Canal, but Anita O'Brien says businesses that cater to people with disabilities are expanding all across the Great Lakes region because people are demanding it.
People with disabilities are becoming more of a self-advocate.
O'Brien is the owner of Rochester Accessible Adventures. She helps companies add accessible equipment and activities to their everyday operations.
The internet has given people the power, their own power, just to Google adaptive kayaking, adaptive cycling. Oh, I heard somebody went skydiving. Can you skydive with a spinal cord injury. And because they're getting that immediate access to the answers of yes, then they're looking around and saying, where can I do that?
And providing those opportunities is good for communities as a whole, according to Buffalo State College's Idea Center. That's short for Inclusive Design and Environmental Access.
And to give my perspective, I look at disability as just simply a mismatch between the demands of the environment and the abilities of people. It's that simple.
Victor Paquette is an engineer who works with the Idea Center. He knows firsthand about accessibility issues because some of his relatives use a wheelchair. And on their annual beach vacation, they used a special wheelchair to get everybody near the water.
You can take a look. This is the wheelchair, right? This is my mother in it. It's a beach wheelchair. It's got wheels that allow you to traverse the beach. It could be a lot of fun. My niece has used it too. That's me
in
the back.
Could you describe that for people who can't see it?
Sure. Well, it's made out of PVC piping, so it's lightweight. It's non-corrosive. It has really large wheels that allow you to transfer the sand quite easily. It's very different than a typical
wheelchair. The Idea Center works to promote inclusivity, not just accessibility. That means making sure environments are available to all kinds of people, those who use wheelchairs, moms with strollers, little kids. For environments that have already been constructed, like the Erie Canal, or for natural environments like a beach, it's about designing and implementing technology to make it accessible.
And the happiness that access to the water can provide to not only the individuals that wouldn't be able to get there, but to the whole family is important. It's what vacations are made out of.
Cataldo agrees. Even though she's in a single kayak now, she has more fun with other people. Just last year, for her 50th birthday, she and a group of friends went kayaking together.
And it was just, for me, a different kind of celebrate my birthday and just get outside and be together, but also have something fun to do.
For Great Lakes Today, I'm Veronica Volk on the Erie Canal.
Great Lakes Today is a reporting partner of WKAR News. It consists of stations from Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, and New York that report on big issues in our region.
Hey, hey, every kiss is a door. Can I knock on yours? Can we knock a little more? If a touch is a key, keep on twisting.
Alex Powell was a Lansing Catholic High School graduate who was about to fulfill his dream of attending Michigan State University when he was diagnosed with cancer. That diagnosis didn't stop him from going to MSU, though it was for only a short time before he passed away. Powell is the namesake of Alex's great state race. Now in its fourth year, ROTC candidates from MSU and the University of Michigan will run from East Lansing to Ann Arbor with game balls that will be used in the rivalry football game this weekend. Money raised will help provide services to students with disabilities at both schools. Before this year's event began on Friday morning, WKAR's Scott Pohl talked with Alex's mother, Juliana, about how her Spartan-loving son turned to the University of Michigan for his cancer treatments.
You know what? I can say that he got the best care there for what he was dealing with. That was where he was recommended to go. And at the time, when you're seeking an awful diagnosis, you really want to get together with your doctors and look for the best care. And we were so blessed that, you know what? That best care happened to be 64 miles away in Ann Arbor. And we received the best care at the University of Michigan.
Explain the involvement of the ROTC from both universities. Does your family have a military connection? How did this come about?
Through lots of prayer. And I don't have a background in any of this. And truly, when I stopped by to talk to Michael Hudson, who happens to be the director at the Resource Center for Persons with Disability, he had mentioned it happened to be the same week that someone flew a plane over Spartan Stadium that said...
The skywriting story. Didn't it just say go blue,
I think? It said go blue.
Yes.
But he said, I happen to have a friend of mine who's just a great idea person. Would you mind me bringing him in and we can kind of pitch your idea to him and see what he has in mind? So that wonderful person happened to be Scott Westerman.
From the MSU Alumni Association.
Absolutely. Who Scott came in with all Scott's energy and said, and actually a similar story with the gratitude towards the cancer center and said, you know what, why don't we pull in the ROTC and see what, you know, pull this together. And the first year of the race, we actually had one of Alex's classmates who ran because he was a cadet at Michigan State University.
Okay, so the race starts at 2 in the morning on Friday.
Can you believe that? Absolutely.
At the Sparty statue. This year we go from East Lansing to Ann Arbor because the game is mm-hmm. being played in Ann Arbor
yes.
Saturday night. So 2 in the morning Friday at Sparty. Runners alternate. There's always one runner from both universities. Is that correct, running at the same time?
There are. We have, and this is true, they're actually running with the actual game balls. So we have, they will be running with the Michigan game ball along with the Michigan State game ball. Usually there are 4 cadets that are out running. They'll run 5-mile segments. It's almost like a relay. And we'll have 2 cadets carrying, the Michigan will be carrying the Michigan ball and the Spartan will be carrying the Spartan ball. But they're also running along with our American flag across the back roads of this great state of Michigan. So it's quite a spectacular sight.
So this is a fundraiser. How is the money raised? How is it allocated to the 2 universities?
You can choose whatever school you want those funds to go to. And 100% of those funds, you just allocate where it's going to go, and it's going to go into what school you want to support.
So has Michigan State raised more than Michigan?
Yes. We need to get Michigan State has raised. I'm proud of our Spartans. We take care of each other. Not that Ann Arbor is not, but we would really like to get them involved a little bit more.
Juliana Powell is Alex's mother, the namesake of Alex's race, Alex's great state race, which starts at 2 a.m. Friday at the Sparty statue on the MSU campus. Great pleasure meeting you. Thank you. For WKAR, I'm Scott Pohl.
He's here, he's there, he's everywhere. MSU's beloved Sparty is one busy guy. WKER contributor Russ White has more.
Sparty, he's the mascot for the entire university.
That's Clint Stevens, director of MSU's Sparty mascot program.
A lot of mascots are born out of athletic departments and a need for a trademark and things like that. Sparty was kind of born by the Alumni Association in 1989. And his job from the beginning, and President Simon has echoed it continuing, is that we are not an athletic mascot only. We just do not do athletic events. We represent the MSU and the university across the state, across the nation.
Sparty gets 750 to 800 requests a year for appearances at everything from weddings and funerals to graduation parties and birthdays.
What a lot of people don't see, unless you're at the events, is we do about 460 events a year, and only 132 of those are athletic events. So basically seeing Sparty on the court side or on the sideline is only 5% of what Sparty does. We really go out and try to connect with as many Spartans and future Spartans and make kids smile, make family, take pictures with families across the state year-round. More than 40% of the events that we do are actually in summer when school is out of session. We're, you know, so in 3 months, we do 40% of our work hitting parades, hitting nonprofit races, golf outings, fundraisers, helping other organizations connect people to MSU and bring people to their events. When I say the walking embodiment of MSU is, you know, Disney has Mickey Mouse, MSU has Sparty. And that's really what we believe in, is that when we go places and when we interact with people, we can change somebody's life for the better and make them a Spartan for life.
Speaking of Disney, Sparty recently tapped his friend Mickey Mouse for advice.
So we did some training with Disney. We partnered with the people who train their characters, and we really worked on brand management and educating Sparty to what's it mean to be the walking embodiment of MSU. So my department and myself went to Disney World and basically got the same education that their employees get about protecting the brand and doing the right things and really caring for something that's not really yours. You know, Mickey has been around for a long time, and he hasn't changed because of the right education, the right discipline around the character.
One of Sparty's main missions is to cultivate a love for MSU in young people.
The other is, you know, really represent the university where the university can't be. Coaches come and go. Players absolutely have to come and go. You know, we only get them for a very short amount of time. Sparty is forever. And that's really what I believe is keeping the program as vital as possible throughout the years.
To learn more or request a Sparty appearance, click on the Traditions tab at alumni.msu.edu or Google Sparty Mascot Program.
We can be asked to be a part of a Spartan's entire life, from high school graduation to kids' birthday parties to their wedding. Sparty does roughly about 30 weddings a year. To help support the program. And then retirement parties, even adult birthday parties for super fans. I mean, it happens. Some of the most special days for us is really helping a family celebrate a Spartan's life. We, in the last year, have been to 4 funerals or celebrations of life where we were requested by the families to come and show that that person loved MSU their entire life, and Sparty is there to help the family celebrate that person's life.
Thanks for joining us for this weekend's Current State. A reminder, if you click on the Current State story on WKER.org, you will see music videos that go with many of the songs we used in our breaks today. WKER's station manager is Peter Worf. Our general manager is Susie Elkins, and I'm Reginald Hardwick, WKER Digital News Director. We leave you now with a song from Tom Petty, who passed away last week at the age of 66. Have a good weekend.
And it's a long day, living in Reseda. There's a freeway running through the yard, and I'm a bad boy. Don't even miss her, I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart. With broken hearts, I'm free.